years ago, the NBA's marquee franchise captured another championship in an historic season, led by one of the greatest players to ever play the game. Hello, everyone. I'm Abby Chin from CSN. Welcome to another episode of the 86 Celtics Interviews. We're bringing you the extended versions of interviews that we conducted for the documentary that premiered in June, celebrating the 30th anniversary of the 86 Celtics. In this week's episode, we hear from the league MVP that season, Larry Bird. It was conducted by Celtics.com's Peter Stringer.
Let's get into the 86 team, obviously. You guys won the title in 84, you lose to the Lakers in 85, made some changes coming into that year. What was the feeling kind of with the team going into that season, knowing the changes were coming? Do you remember kind of what you felt like heading into that training camp?
Well, we picked up Bill Walton, Jerry Siegstein, and some other players. And going in, we always felt that if we stayed healthy in any season, that we had a good chance to get to the finals. I don't know about winning the championship, but you had to get to the finals first before you can win. But, you know, with Bill's history, we had no clue. We got off to a pretty good start in training camp. He was pretty healthy, and we was trying to ride the wave. The good thing about it is Robert and Bill were such good friends and got along. The transition was very easy. We always said that Robert's the one that had to give the most for us to be successful on the offensive end. Then when Bill came, Bill was all about winning, so it made the transition very easy. And going through camp, knowing that we had an extra big and Jerry from a shooting standpoint, and been very active with the point guards, we felt we had a good chance to make a hell of a run.
And Bill was a guy that you watched growing up, and right. Danny and everyone. What was that like to have a guy like that?
Well, he's so easy to play with. You know, he's always looking to move the ball. He's always likes backdoor cuts. He likes you to throw it in the post and either go away and set a pick or run off of him. So Bill was very easy to play with because you always had to be watching the ball when he had it in his hands. A very talented player. But like I said, we didn't know what we was going to get out of him. So every game was a special game because we didn't know he was going to be broke down the next game. But that year he played 80 games, and we won a lot of them. Won a lot of them because of him.
And how much of an impact did he have on the passing of that team? You guys were already a good passing team, but adding him to the mix.
Well, it makes it easy. Anytime you can work out of the post and you can go and set flare screens and down screens for other players and keep the ball moving, it keeps the defense off balance, and it makes them work harder on the defensive end.
With that team, yourself coming into that summer, I believe you'd hurt your back in the summertime coming into the season. How long did it take you to kind of feel like you kind of were yourself again going into that year?
Well, my back was bothering me in 84 in the summer, in 83, really 84. But actually, I had a pretty good year that year. I think I was in 87, I felt as good as I felt in a long time. But my back was always a problem, and I think it was well chronicled throughout Boston that if my back felt good, I played good. If it didn't, I was going to struggle at times. But my concerns were just trying to stay healthy as a team, not just individually, because we had enough firepower if somebody went down to continue to win. As far as my back, it was just part of the daily grind. You just go out and you play and you have treatment and you prepare yourself to win basketball games.
And going back and reading about that team, there's so much talk about the green team versus the white team in practice. Tell me a little bit about what those practices were like.
Well, you know, I was talking to someone the other day, and they was asking if I played what's the second unit much, and I can't ever remember playing on the green, putting a green jersey on, going out to practice. We was always on the same team. It was always right. Me and Max and Robert, or it was me and Kevin and Robert. But Bill had his own identity, his own team in practice, and they put up good battles every day. It was a test, because you got to remember, Scotty Webb was on that team, and they had a heck of a bench, and a competitive bench, so every day in practice was, it was a tough go, because, you know, a lot of them guys didn't play a lot of minutes, and we come off playing 38, 40 minutes a game, then have to go in there and face these guys. It was demanding, but it made us all better.
With the competitive nature of the locker room, it was also a very loose team, a loose locker room. People are joking around each other, and then Danny had to have been the happiest guy when Bill came in because they had somebody new in a rib.
Danny, we always picked on Danny, but Danny was tough. You know, the one thing that people don't realize was Danny Ainge was a heck of a basketball player. He was a tough kid. He showed up and played every day hurt. You know, he grinded it out. He gave you everything he had every minute. So he was a major player on them teams that were successful. And you're right, when Bill came in, Danny sort of turned the switch over and started bullying him. So it was interesting to see.
And yet Bill, I mean, if you ask Bill Walton about his experience with the Celtics, you know, he just pontificates forever about how an incredible experience it was, and just the idea of just even carrying your bag was fun to him.
Well, it was a great experience because we knew that if we stayed healthy, we was going to win, and we was going to win in a big way. So that takes all the pressure off of it. But you still have to play the games, and if you play the games the right way, you're going to win.
We touched on the why the team was so good at the Garden, but specifically you guys lost one game the entire year
right.
at the Garden. Why was the team so good at home?
Well, we came to play, we came to win. And it's a lot easier doing it at home than it is on the road. On the road, there's all kinds of different things going on. A lot of friends want to come out for tickets and go out after games and different things. And at home, you just feel more comfortable. I don't know why we went 40-1, but I do know why Portland beat us, because they were better that day. We played a good game, but they were just better.
What stands out to you about that game and that loss?
Well, we were playing hard, we were playing good, and then they got on a run, and they just ran it down our throats. I mean, they were attacking us, and the speed that they had in their backcourt was really too much for us, because they had us on our heels all day.
Just the old Boston Garden, what comes to mind when you think about just playing in that arena?
Well, I thought it was awesome. I remember going there for the first time, and it caught me off guard a little bit. It was upstairs of the train tracks, and I was just there to watch a game when I was in college. Then when I came back and started playing on it in our games, we didn't practice there much at all until the playoffs. But during the games, the crowd, the fans, and it felt like they was right on top of you. Obviously, they were behind you 100%. So it was a thrill to play there. It really was.
When you think about the Christmas Day game, loss in New York
yeah.
Pivotal moment in the season?
I don't think so. I mean, we like to say that it was an embarrassing moment, I know that. I think we're up 18 in the third quarter, and they make a run, and I think it went in overtime, if my memory is correct. But I can remember somebody coming to the locker room and said, no more beer or alcohol rest of the year. I like to drink my beer, and I wasn't very happy about it, but we did it, and we won a championship. So I can't say that's why we won it, but it was embarrassing enough for us to have to make some changes.
When I believe it's mid-January, the Hawks game, the comeback there, I believe you tore up the locker room.
Does that
stand out?
No, I didn't tear up no locker room.
There's a story about that. Maybe that's not true.
I might have punched one of my teammates in the face, but I didn't tear up no locker room.
Casey had a halftime speech in there. Does that stand out?
Oh, that was down in Atlanta.
Yeah, down in Atlanta.
No, I didn't tear up no locker room. But Casey Jones, I think, got really mad at us two times the whole time he coached me, and that was one night. He was very upset with us, the way we're playing. He was upset the way Atlanta was talking to us, and he kept reminding us that they're the instigators and we're retaliators. We got to be the instigators, and we went out the second half and got on a run and ended up beating them.
Why was Casey such a great coach for that team, or the right coach for that team?
I don't think anything really bothered Casey other than losing, and we knew that. Casey's the nicest human being I've ever met in my life. He was a gracious man, not just to his players, but to all. He had an attitude that, he's an ex-player. He knew when fatigue set in. He knew how to talk to players. I just thought he handled us like a coach should that played the game. Maybe we're too loose at times. We probably did some things we probably shouldn't during games, like say I got it going, I want the ball more, and been a little selfish at times, but Casey understood all of it, but when it's time to put us in our place, he did.
When the team is that good and you're kind of walking into gyms and expecting to beat teams, do you have to do other things to kind of keep the competitive juices flowing or challenge yourself in different ways?
Sure you do. You have to play games left-handed, or you have to do different things to keep your interest in the game, but we just didn't think we were going to lose, and we lost some games throughout the year. I can remember one in particular where I was mad at Kevin and Bill before the game. They were messing around in Dallas, and I was very upset, so I went out and I told them, I don't need you guys. I'll win it by myself. I score 50 and we lose. But I made my point.
Right.
I don't know. But I thought I made my point.
The left-handed game, that's absolutely my favorite clip to go back and watch. The idea that you could not only just decide to play left-handed, but I think you put up a triple-double that night too.
Well, left-handed is one thing, but when the game got close, I had to go back to the right one. I think it went right down the wire, and we might have won by 1 point. But, you know, you do things out there. I mean, Danny Ainge, I can remember one night, KC was talking to us about shooting too many three-point shots. And everybody agreed we had to cut down. And right off, I think it was against New York, right off the tip, the ball goes to Danny. He pulls up from about 35 and shoots a three. And I guess that talk went right out the window.
Speaking of Danny, end of the season, the free throw title's on the line. And he starts going to the basket, and Danny Ainge never went to the basket.
Right. I think he shot about 20 that year. But I had a bonus in one of my contracts. If he shot so many free throws, he had like a percentage higher than me. And he was out there trying to do it. But KC finally took him out so he wouldn't beat my record.
Did everybody on the bench kind of know that was going
on? Everybody knew it. Everybody knows Danny, too.
Yeah. That sounds like something Danny would do. He's super competitive. we talked about the left-handed game. That team won 67 games. When you look back, obviously there are a few losses any season you're going to regret. Kind of when you look back, was it a missed opportunity that maybe you didn't get to that 72 record?
I don't think that was a real goal for us. I think it was just staying healthy. We lose our first game in New Jersey, our last game at home in Boston Garden. We lose to Sacramento. So there's a lot of teams that we probably could have beat. It's not that we took off and said we're going to take the night off, but in Sacramento was coming back from the All-Star break. We didn't really get in a good practice the day before the game, and I missed two free throws down stretch. So anything can happen in a game because you got to give the other team some credit sometimes. Maybe they just better that night.
When you think about that, the playoff run, you guys get the Bulls in the first round, and Jordan's really just coming to his own. He missed most of that season, then has the ridiculous game in game two. Obviously, you know, you made it pretty clear you thought, you know, he was God in disguise as Michael Jordan. But what did you see on the floor that night when he puts up that ridiculous?
Well, you know, the first game he had 49, so that's nothing to shun ourselves about it. But he had 63, and the problem in them games when a guy gets going like that, if you really concentrate too much on him, then he starts making plays for other players. But really going in late in the fourth quarter, we had to really try to stop him and forget about the other guys. Just box out, make sure we get the rebound if they miss. But Michael continued to score and continue to give his team an opportunity to win. If you remember that game right down at the end, they were ahead.
Right.
Then we won't go another, two or three overtimes. But Michael was spectacular, and sometimes you get hot and you score a lot of points. But that day in a playoff game in the Boston Garden, that was special.
Seeing his evolution at that point, was it kind of clear the league was starting to change in terms of what would make players successful and the style of play at that point?
Well, you got to remember, we had great scoring players before him. I mean, Thompson from Denver, then you had help me, Jeff, from San Antonio. Iceman, George Gervin from San Antonio. They're as good a scorer as anybody ever played in this league. Michael was different. You know, Michael could fly through the air, and he could make spectacular dunks. He could guard people. He was an all-around player, where the other two were really just offensive players. They're great players, but they wasn't known for the defense like Michael.
When you guys get to the finals, disappointed not to see the Lakers on the other side of the floor?
Well, we always wanted to play the Lakers. There's no question about it, but Houston was an upcoming team with Elijah Wan and some of their players. They had a very good team. It was sad that they won two games. We were better than that. We should have, I don't know about sweeping them, but we should never have lost game five. That's a game we have to get. If you're a championship team, you go out and win that basketball game.
And that was the Sampson brawl with Jerry. And what was the impact of that on the series? At that point, again, you're already up. But
well, you know, you're in a championship series. You can't be doing that. I mean, I thought it was distasteful for both sides. I think that you just got to play the game. It was a game that we wanted to win. We wanted to get the series over with because anything can happen if you stay out there long enough. You get guys injured. But going into game six, we took care of business.
And certainly when Sampson came into the Garden, was he overwhelmed by that atmosphere that when he walked
in? I would have been. I mean, it was pretty overwhelming. But I don't think anybody could have beat us that day. We were on. We made some mistakes early. But the energy was there. The excitement was there. And we knew if we continued to play hard, we were going to win.
Was that one of your best games in game six and coming out?
It was in a playoff series, yes. I don't know. You know, everybody's always asked my best game, but I would take that 90 and a night out, yes.
And just looking at the tape, you're all over the place. So you're flying around in the offense.
I was playing zone all night, yeah. I was Jake O'Donnell, the official that night, warned me about 100 times to get out of a zone. But I was active because I was nervous. And I wasn't nervous to a point where I was scared. I was just had a lot of energy that day.
Yeah. In the aftermath of winning that title, what are the things you remember? I know you guys went to the bench a little bit earlier than everybody else as that game wound down. What are the things you remember just from the moments of getting off the floor? First of all, because in 84, you guys almost got killed trying to get off the floor.
Right, get out of there.
Yeah.
And, it's not a safe environment, but it's sort of fun, but it's you need to get off the court. Now they have everything after the game on the court. I'm not saying we didn't have security there because they were everywhere, but they're the first ones on the court to grab you.
Yeah.
But and that's Boston, you know. I mean, I understand that. I understand all of it. But I know when I got taken out of that game, my heart started pounding really hard, and I was very nervous that I was going to pass out because just the excitement, not only for being a Boston Celtic, but because the fans were really into it, and we won a championship, and it was a championship we should have won. So obviously there was a little pressure I lifted off my shoulders, but in saying that, I was sky high. I mean, my heart was pumping hard.
And coming out of that season, what do you think of the parade going through Boston? Do you have any memories from that specific parade?
Well, you know, the parades are great.
Yeah.
But there's nothing like playing basketball in the Boston Garden in the playoffs when the crowd's really into it. We played a game in there against the Lakers when it was 90 degrees, and I'm telling you, that's real basketball. And the fans are right on you. Like I told Bill Walton one time, I said, when they're standing the whole game, they want to win. And they want to win very badly. And Bill came up the lines, they want blood, and they don't care whose it is, you
right.
know. So, and it's true. I mean, our fans want to win. They expect us to win. And that's what we try to do for them.
What was life like as Larry Bird in 1986 and beyond that, once you guys won your third title in a couple of years?
We didn't have social media back then, but everybody knows me. Everywhere I go, people recognize me. I'm not a limelight type of guy. I'm not a self-promoter. I sort of let my basketball do my talking. I love to play the game. I like to play it and then go home and relax and do what I do. Boston was very good to me. I'm forever grateful that when I went home, 99.9% of the time, they left me alone. But when I was at the Garden, they wanted a piece of me, and I understood that. I did what I could do out there within reason. I tried to do charity work. I tried to do different things. But overall, I was treated probably as well. I don't know other athletes, but if they're treated as well as I was treated in Boston, they should be very grateful because it was the ride of my life. There's no question about it. It was the best time of my life, and I'll never forget it.
Going into 87 and beyond, obviously injuries started catching up with that team. Do you guys feel like you left a few titles on the table?
No question. And I'm not going to get into what years, but 87 we were banged up pretty good. But we made it there. We gutted it out. I was probably the healthiest guy on the team down the stretch. Roberts with Roberts' ankles, Kevin's foot. Danny, I think, had a hip injury. But we were beat up, and we gutted it out. And the Lakers beat us. It's unfortunately that the Lakers won another title against us, but that was one of my most gratifying year because the way we handled ourselves and the way we really went after people. There's a lot of game sevens throughout the playoffs, but we dug down and won them. It's just unfortunate we didn't win, and I do feel we left some on the table. We were very young in 82, 83. We won one in 81. I thought our momentum would keep us going all the way. Injuries are part of it. I knew the way I played, I wasn't going to last long, but I was going to enjoy it while I was there. So that's just the way my career went. You know, I had a good career, but I wasn't going to leave anything on the table. I was going to play as hard as I could, as well as I could. Then when it was over, it was over.
So you never thought about maybe just scaling back, diving through tables to go
no.
after loose balls? Just
that's not how I played, and I don't think I would have been as effective if I didn't do things like that. I was the leader. I wasn't really the vocal leader. I led by example. And I always felt if I did it, they would do it. And the only way we're going to win is, you know, most games come down to missed free throws and possessions. And if that one possession gives us another opportunity to score and win a ball game, you have to try to do it.
When you think about that team and you think about how it would stack up against, you know, the 08 Celtics that won here after you guys finally, or, you know, a Cleveland team or a Golden State who won last year. How do you think that 86 team stacks
up? Well, you never
up?
Know until you play against somebody. I played against a lot of players I thought that were going to be really good and never presented a problem for me. Then I played against other players I thought I was going to run right over, and they presented some problems. Matchups in this league is huge.
Yeah.
And you got to go to your matchups, especially when you have a advantage against someone. So it's really hard to tell how we would done against other teams. But I know when we played, we was pretty dominant, especially in the East.
The three-point shot is such a different piece of the game.
Right.
That when you started playing, you really I've read that you didn't really weren't a huge fan of the shot, but kind of reluctantly started shooting it.
Well, I can remember when I first came in, our first year, Chris Ford was our marksman from three-point range.
Right.
We really didn't shoot that many. As the years went on, we shot more and more. But I never tried to use my advantage till the end of the game. I really liked the pounded inside and playing the rough, rugged basketball that's played in the paint. The game has changed. I think that team could have adjusted and played the way they do now. But still, when you have McKill and Parrish down low, you want to give them the ball as much as you possibly can.
Was so much of that about the philosophy that, like, Rick Carlisle talked about this at an NBA meeting a few months ago, saying that back in that day, the philosophy was get the closest possible shot.
Right.
That's just a different mentality today.
Right, but when you have Parrish McHale, you should do that.
Yeah.
And probably more than we did.
Yeah, absolutely. How come so many of the guys who were involved with that team are still involved in the game today? They're in executive roles, coaching roles like McHale. What is it about that group?
I don't know. If you look at the history of the Boston Celtics, you see a lot of the guys around everywhere, especially a few years ago. I mean, they were in the D leagues. They were in the scouting. They were, you know, I think it's a great compliment on Red Auerbach, how he ran his organization. Not that he brought us in and set us down and said, I think you'd be a good coach or you should do this or that. But I just think the way things were structured and the way we played, I think guys always had a good feel of how the game was supposed to be played and played a certain way. And that's the type of guys Red brought in. And as they moved forward in their careers, they wanted to coach. They wanted to scout. You know, they wanted to be college coaches. So I think it was just a product of Red Auerbach.
You talked about Red Auerbach. What did you take from watching him construct the team? And obviously by the time you were there into the 80s, it was Jan Volk kind of taking over a little bit. But what did you learn from Red in terms of running an organization?
Well, when Red was there, Red was in control all the time, and we knew that. It's not a knock on Jan Volk, but Red Auerbach is Red Auerbach. It's sort of like here when Donnie Walsh was here. You know,
yeah.
He was the man, and I was behind him. He made the decisions. But the thing about Red was, I can remember in 1980, all he talked about was Ralph Sampson.
Yeah.
And he was going on and on about Ralph, not every day, but, you know, he mentioned his name. And next thing you know, we got Parrish McHale. And I'm going, wow, that's pretty interesting. And I really didn't know much about Kevin. All I heard was he was a defensive player. And as we got going, we could tell that them two combined are pretty good players. Because if you remember, back in 81, Dave Cowens retired in training camp, and Robert had to start playing right away, and he was in no condition to play. And Kevin was just a rookie, and we didn't know how he was going to do, but it all turned out we won a championship. So as you went from 81 to 82, 83, I had a feeling that we could win forever then. Unfortunately, in 82 and 83, we didn't. And then once we came back in 84, we finally got our team back together, and Red, you know, Red was involved in all of it. He brought in players that we needed. We always felt that if we needed an extra piece, he could go get it. So it made it very easy for us.
We talked about McHale a little bit. How good was he in the low post, and what made him so
good? He's as good as anybody. You talk about Olajuwon and all the other great ones. They're great. But Kevin was as good as anybody I've ever seen. The problem with Kevin didn't demand the ball a lot. He liked balls in certain spots. He knew I could get him to him. I think one of my problems was sometimes I had so much confidence in myself that when he had it really going really well, that I probably dominated the ball a little bit too much. I probably should have went to him a little bit more. Case is 19, I think it was 87 in game six down the stretch. I made some bad plays, and Kevin was like, I don't know, 9 for 12, 9 for 13 in the game, and that's probably not the right, but it, you know, it was close to that. And I didn't have a great shooting game, and I continued to force shots when we probably should have went to him.
And he's playing on a broken foot at that point, right?
Yeah, but he's still pretty good.
What about just, you know, Kevin was a little different in terms of off the court, on the court, and kind
right.
of maybe not necessarily as laser focused as on basketball as you were. Was that something that created animosity at times?
No. The one thing I learned as I went through my career was everyone's different. You know, people don't take the game as seriously 24/7 as I did, and that's okay because he has a family. He has things that you know, he wants to do. I can remember we played in New York like a 12 or 1 o'clock game on Christmas, and Kevin wasn't there on the flight the night before with us.
Right.
And he came walking on saying, well, I got children. Well, we all got family. You know, yeah. I mean, it's just not, you know, does your 3-year-old kid or 4-year-old kid know it's really Christmas? Could you fake him out a day or two later? Right. You know, but it really didn't matter. I mean, we didn't hold any grudges because when we got on the court, we played. I mean, I hear things now that Danny always says, go talk to Larry because Larry ain't gonna throw to Kevin because Kevin, he's mad at Kevin. I don't really remember a lot of that. I remember DJ doing it a lot, but I don't remember Danny doing it a lot.
DJ, let's talk about him. You've many times called him the best teammate you ever had. What made him so special?
Well, the best teammate I ever had was ML Carr. The best player in big situations, I thought, was
sure.
DJ. Not because he scored a lot of points. He did all the dirty work. He had to guard all the best players. He had to guard Magic. Had to do different things. And, you know, he shot, a very poor percentage during the year. He probably shot 44%. We
right.
always thought that was really bad back in the day. But if it was a big shot, he would make it. We always felt he could make it. But just his mentality. When Dennis Johnson drove the basketball to the basket, he was serious about winning a basketball game.
And you go back and look at the footage, so many times you'll see DJ up at the top of the key, and you're just kind of floating around trying to lose your guy, and then he'll hit you with a pass out of nowhere.
Right.
Where did that evolve? Is that just from knowing each other and playing?
Right, and anticipating. He basically knew what I was going to do and when I was going to cut, the way I set up, and vice versa. The backdoor plays was always, if the guy turns his head, it's coming.
Yeah.
And just be ready.
So. And obviously that paid off on the big steal in 87 with the Pistons. Him cutting to the basket, I mean, out of nowhere.
Yeah, he plays off reaction like I do. A lot of guys can't do that, but if you just play off reaction, things happen, and that's what happened. I almost took the shot, which I didn't want to because I was behind the board a little bit. But out of corner of my eye, I seen DJ flashing. Well, I just seen a white jersey flashing down through there, and now we know it's DJ.
Parrish, we haven't really talked about him a lot. Did he get overlooked just based on the offensive abilities of you and Kevin specifically?
Right, and he probably gave up more than anybody. He didn't demand it. He liked his shots. If Robert ran the court and you could keep him happy, give him the ball, you know, most of the time to finish off, that kept Robert happy because you don't like big men out running when they don't get the ball. So you had to reward him somewhere. But Robert was a 58% field goal shooter and probably a 78-80% free throw shooter. So it wasn't like he was a bad shooter. It's just that there's just so many shots to go around. That's why we always try to get 100 shots up a game. And if we knew we'd get 100 field goal attempts, everybody would be satisfied.
We haven't touched on Scott Wedman, but here's a guy that was a two-time All-Star. Comes in. How good is him in that bench to be able to come into games and not just maintain a lead but extend a lead? How
yeah.
much of an advantage was that for
Well,
you,
you know, me and Scotty competed every day in practice against one another, and there's a lot of days where he played a lot better than me. He was a dead-eye shooter. He was tough. He'd get up into it. He played the game the right way. But it's always good to have a guy that can come in and score points in bunches. You know, I mean, I can remember Scotty hitting like 11 three-pointers in a row, 7 in one game. It's unfortunately in 84 he hurt his leg and couldn't play in the final series the last few games. And then in 86 he was hurt. I think he broke some ribs. But he tried to play. And it's unfortunate, but his career was a good career. I can remember when we first got him in Boston, we were happy to get him. And he was a very valuable asset for us.
And Jerry Seasting, what did he
bring? Jerry was great. The 2 years we had Jerry, especially in 86, Jerry shot like 56% from the field. He's a dead-eye shooter. He's the one kid that we could get up and put pressure full court on other point guards. Isaiah hated to play against him, so it was great for me to see it. And he was scrappy. Jerry was a good little player, yes.
When you go back and think about just that 86 team, what are the things that immediately come to mind, and where kind of how do you look back on it?
Well, most of it reflects on Bill and Kevin, how they got along. They really respected one another. But just how easy a lot of the games were and how we played, just the looseness of the locker room. And every day it seemed like the guys couldn't wait to get to practice, see one another.
when you guys run into each other, whether it's, you know, Kevin's in town with the Rockets or Danny's here with the Celtics, what are the things you guys talk about just about?
Well, it's not the 86 team. It's usually how your families are doing and how you are doing. But we don't get into that. Matter of fact, this is the first time I probably talked about this in a long time. And as the years pass, you forget about a lot of the little things. But and everyone sees things different. They have their own stories.
Did you hold on to any mementos or anything from that year, or just knowing that it was a title?
No, I'm not big in any of that stuff. The one thing that I'm thrilled about is my name, my number's hanging in the rafters in the new Boston Garden. It felt better when it was in the old one, but it's in the new one, and when people look up there, hopefully they remember who 33 was.
In 1986, Bird earned his third straight MVP award and was also MVP of the finals. During the playoffs that year, he averaged 26 points, over 9 rebounds, and 8 assists per game while shooting 52% from the floor. 1986, though, was the last of Bird's 3 NBA championships. He retired after the 1992 season due to chronic back injuries. We want to thank you so much for listening to another episode of the 86 Celtics Interviews from CSNNE.com. Again, you can subscribe on our iTunes feed or by downloading at CSNNE.com. Make sure you look for a new episode every Tuesday and Thursday, and please leave us a rating and a review in the iTunes store. Help us spread the word.